Was there something supernatural behind one of the most famous family murders? Who or what possessed George Lutz? Why would a family run from their new home less than a month after closing? Today we test the believability of the Amityville Horror.
Welcome to Believing the Bizarre,
where we dive into the unknown and the unusual,
and tell you whether or not we find it believable.
That's right. Today we're talking about a heavy Halloween hitter.
Heavy Halloween hitter.
Yeah, this is a big one.
Who's in it? Is it Ryan Gosling or Ryan Reynolds? Or who isn't someone in this movie that's famous? Ryan. Like 2005 or something, 2006?
All I can think is Chris Pine.
Okay.
I don't know.
It's one of those guys.
It's not Ryan Reynolds for sure. Or Ryan Gosling.
Are you sure?
No.
So it was Ryan Reynolds.
That's wild.
I knew it was a Ryan. And that was my first guess. But then the more I thought about it, the more it felt like a Ryan Gosling.
I was like, Chris Ryan. Ryan Chris. Pine.
Chris Evans Ryan.
Thor Pine.
Thor Pine.
If you will. So this is, it's a big story. A movie, several movies, several movies. It's also a book, a couple books as well.
Also potentially a true thing that happened, right?
Well, that's the thing. What do you mean?
I mean, it's based off real events.
Well, there's something definitely did happen. There is a murder that happened here.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's real.
Can we get those, the true crime maracas or whatever they're called?
Marimbas.
Marimbas, yeah.
True crime marimbas.
Yeah, the Roomba. Yeah. We're going to clean your brain of true crime with the Roomba.
And then we're going to talk about the Lutz family.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the Warrens make an appearance. They pop their little heads in.
They're like, hey, do you need our services? Do you want to pay us?
hey, hello. You want to make some money? And Lutz is like, really, yeah, let's make some money.
Let's get that dough. I can't believe Halloween is almost here already.
Yeah. Is this the week before?
No, it's 2 weeks away, but it will be here before you know it. We're already like halfway through. We are more than halfway through October.
I can't believe that.
It flies by when you're having fun and incredibly busy.
Incredibly busy. Definitely. I feel like I'm the busiest I've ever been.
I can guarantee you this is the busiest I've ever been in my life.
Yeah, which it's burn the candle at both ends while you can, right?
I've never heard that before. It sounds like you're going to burn your hand when you do that.
You are. You're going to burn yourself out.
Oh, I see. Is this a good time to tell you I'm quitting?
Well, goodbye from the podcast. You ready to jump into this?
Yeah.
Whorehouse.
Horror house.
With a hard O.
Yeah, pretend like you're from Boston. The horror.
Horror.
The horror house.
Horror house. So there are two cases when it comes to talking about the Amityville Horror. I have such a hard time saying this name.
It's like an enemy, right?
Amityville.
Amityville.
Yes. And it's a city in Long Island, New York.
Okay.
So it's Long Island, New York. Have you ever seen the house?
Yeah, windows, right? It's pretty recognizable.
It's actually a very nice house. Pretty house.
Would you buy it? Would you live there? Whoa. I'm telling you, it's a lot more than Faye in that house, bro.
Oh, I don't know. Is that bad that I don't know?
I would fly to you every Thursday when we record just to record in that house.
Well,
you'd be catching some crazy EVPs during our episodes.
Here's the thing. Spoilers. People have lived there after. People still live there.
Okay.
And they don't say it's haunted.
So we have to kick them out. Or maybe we can Airbnb one room just to record in.
There you go.
They should do that if they're not already. They should turn into at least one room into an Airbnb.
Yeah, they should. They make a lot of money.
You have to sleep laying face down.
Wow. So there are murders that happen in this house, like I said up top. The true crime case with a flair of supernatural.
Yes. I remember it mostly. I've seen the movies, but it's been so long. I feel like it was the witching hour that we talked about this, and I don't know why.
You and I?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
It was like it was a very, very early episode that we touched on this case.
Oh, yeah, we did.
It was like the witching hour. No, it was the witching hour, because that's when, yeah. Okay, spoilers, but yeah. Well, no spoilers. I'm not going to say it.
Okay.
But it was, I think episode 7 is when we touched on this last, but it was like very, very brief overview.
Yeah. So there's also is that haunting at this house with a lens of potential misgivings attached to it. But we'll touch on that in the end. So Amityville's Long Island, New York, in 1974, a family of seven lived there. They lived there for about 9 years.
Well, I can't imagine affording a family of seven right now.
Oh my God, no. Can you believe that?
Unless six of them have jobs.
Well, there is a theory that DeFeo Sr.
Oh, yeah.
Was associated with the mafia.
That's the father.
Yes.
Of this family.
Yes. But I don't know how true that is. That's not neither confirmed nor denied.
There's a lot of mouths to feed.
It is. It's a lot. And also, you know, the mom wasn't working because it was the 70s.
So it was probably transitioning into that.
She didn't
right?
work.
Okay.
She didn't work. In November of 1974, Ronald DeFeo Jr., he possibly committed one of the most famous murders in true crime American history. These murders that Ronald DeFeo Jr. committed might have been the catalyst for one of the most famous hauntings of American history.
Mm. Wow, true crime meets horror.
It's that one of those nice episodes where they mesh.
You can have like when you have groups of friends and they don't like the same things, and you can bring them together. This is like a marriage between the horror and paranormal and the true crime. And
who you stands get to intermingle. On what side?
I personally see paranormal on the left, and I see true crime on the right.
Okay.
That's also the order that I rank them in terms of value.
Like, who shows up from the true crime side? Like, Jeffrey Dahmer and, like, you know, Gacy. But, like, on the horror side, you have, like, zombies and
vampires. Mothman.
Yeah.
Fresno Nightcrawlers.
Yeah.
We walked all the way here from Fresno. Which is a long walk if it's in New York.
Yeah, it's not a nice flight. But this is like, you said, the marriage. This is because it's both things. But first thing we're going to talk about is the murders. Because I feel like it's half the story. And this is the first half.
Sure.
So Ronald DeFeo was the oldest son of Ronald DeFeo Sr. They lived there on 112 Ocean Avenue for 9 years. And DeFeo Jr. used a lever-action Marlin 33-6C rifle, 35 caliber, to murder his whole family. The thing about this gun, it's known to be very loud.
As opposed to most guns, which are just like, pew, pew.
No, Well, that's the thing. This gun's, like, super loud. Like, guns are loud in general.
It's got an air horn attached to it. It must not have came from the mob.
Well, no. But yeah, it's a really loud gun.
Okay.
So keep that in mind.
Yeah, it's loud.
The names of the people that were killed are Ronald Sr., Louise, his mom, the wife, his sister Dawn, sister Allison, brother Mark, and brother John. One of the strangest aspects of the murder is that all the victims were found in their beds. It was evident that none of the victims had been moved. They lay where they were shot.
By, like, blood trails?
There were no blood trails.
But that's what I mean. Like, that's how you know that they weren't moved.
You could tell, like, no one was moved beforehand, no one was moved after.
Mm-hmm.
They were all in their beds. So no one got out of bed, right? There was no panic. No ballistic signs of guns being silenced either. Like, there was no signs that he had put a silencer over or, like, pillows over or anything, because it was all full power.
Is there any chance he got the entire family AirPods and told them to sleep with the noise cancellation on?
I'm gonna guess not, because it's the 70s.
Okay.
But I don't know. I'm not gonna rule anything out. One of the weirdest things, no one outside the house heard the shots either. So that's one of the weirdest things about this case to me, is that no one moved.
So you'd assume, based on the gun being so loud, that you feel like the other would have heard it and woke up.
Yeah, at least on the first one. He did kill his father first. Kill his father, and then he killed his mother.
Could they have been drugged?
No. There was nothing in the toxicology. That's a question that has been asked. There's nothing in the toxicology.
I wonder if there's anything that... I don't know enough about this stuff, but, like, if anything could have slipped past the test. Because then he could have moved them, but it would have been before killing them, right? So they go to sleep. He does something before sleep. They all get knocked out. Then he rearranges them the way he wants, and then he pulls the trigger.
They're also all dressed in their pajamas as well, which is interesting.
It was a before bedtime snack.
Hot chocolate.
Hot chocolate with some type of
bullet-shaped cookies?
No, like, you know, something you pour in it. Listen, I'm not going around drugging people. I don't know this stuff.
I'm not a roofie scientist.
Yeah, I've seen that episode of One Tree Hill. Like, I know it's not good. You know they make nail polish now where you, like, you can put your finger in it?
I did know that. They also make straws and stuff with that, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You have to drink it first, but then you can tell because the straw will go red.
The straw changes color if you stir it.
You're like, oh, okay, if you stir it.
Okay, I get sleepy. But yeah, that's a question that's been asked. No, nothing in their toxicology was show that there was drugging.
Is this where they're face down the pillow?
Like where they laid. Okay. Like how they slept is how they were
for
shot.
For some reason, I remember thinking all of them were face down the
pillow. Now, there was animosity between Senior and Junior. He actually went by Butch to differentiate himself.
He went by Ronald McDonald.
He went by Butch.
I'll show you the secret sauce.
Jesus Christ. Tyler, no.
Sorry, okay, I'm done.
He wanted to differentiate himself from his father.
So he went by Butch.
Butch.
Much cooler name.
I don't know about that.
I would agree with that statement.
Ronald Sr. was known to be physically and verbally abusive to the family, but especially to his wife and to his oldest son, Butch.
Did the wife live?
No.
Oh, okay.
She's killed as well.
So we're all, everyone in the family besides Butch.
Yeah.
Okay.
He killed everyone. Butch was bullied in school, and he was called fat, and he was made fun of. So Ronald was, like I said, he was abusive to his son, and he would not allow a coward to live at his house. So his father taught him how to defend himself so he could fight back against the bullies.
Or kill his family.
Or kill his family, which is what he chose to do.
Okay.
Butch had a temper. Worse than his father's, actually. And as he got older, this would flare up at, like, the slightest provocation. His parents tried therapy. Failed. They gave up on it. They also tried to give him everything he wanted to appease him. They even got him a speedboat.
Wow.
Yeah. Butch was asked to leave school at 17. And after he left, he fell heavily into drug use, LSD, and heroin. Which also may account for what happens later in his life. On November 13th, Butch is 23, so a couple years have gone by, and he said he couldn't get in touch with his family, end quote. Quote, couldn't get in touch with his family, end quote. He told this to his girlfriend and to his friends. They were at this bar, and they were drinking. And he spent most of the day there. Until about 6 p.m., he made a call. He got, like, a payphone, and called his family's house to go along with this cover story. And then he went over there. At 6:30 p.m., he ran into that same bar he was at before and screamed that his parents had been shot. He left that bar with a mob of people, and they called the police.
So that was from the day before then that they were killed? Like the night before?
That was from the, yeah, the day after they were shot.
Okay. So is he 17 or 23?
He was kicked out of school at 17. He was 23 when he shot them.
Okay.
He executed the murders at 3:15 a.m.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That's why it's part of the witching hour.
That's right.
Supposedly, right?
What do you mean?
Supposedly killed them.
Oh, he definitely did it.
Oh, you don't even think it's a, any chance that it wasn't him?
No.
Okay.
No way.
Okay. Man, somebody angry with a speedboat.
Yeah, everything he wanted, really. He was given a job. He was given everything he wanted. He was just appeased, but
I bet you think he came up with the plan on the speedboat?
I don't think so. I think he came up with the plan in the basement.
The basement.
Because that's going to come back later, the basement.
Mm.
It's hard to imagine how DeFeo did this crime by himself. Because of the circumstances. No one moved from their bed and the loudness of the weapon used. It's hard to imagine that DeFeo actually did the crime because, quote, the prosecutor and the police admitted on several occasions that the crime would have required three people and another independent investigator by retired police detective Herman Race reached the same conclusion, end quote. So they concluded that this murder almost feels like it must have been done by more than one person.
So maybe he didn't do it.
Oh, I think he did it, but I think he might have done it with at least another person, and that might have been his sister Dawn.
Hmm.
Because there's reason to speculate that she was having a hard time with her father and mother as well. And she didn't like how she was treated. But here's the thing. She was also killed in her bed. So was the plan to let her survive and then he just finish the job? Or
could he have hired someone? Like, if he had everything he wanted, if he had money, if he had a speedboat and all this stuff, I know that the internet wasn't really around like that, where you could go on Craigslist or whatever, but I wonder if he could have found six people.
And just done the thing all at once?
Yeah, just paid them. And then they six people go in and they do it and they know exactly at 3:15 pull the trigger.
I think that's a theory. I think that would be really hard to execute. But I think that's definitely a theory.
What would be hard about it? Finding the people or getting them to do it, or paying them?
Finding six people to do that, and they'd be a lot of money.
Well,
too.
You find one person and then they have a friend and they know someone who needs money and someone else is a really good shooter.
Like how a podcast starts?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they're like, hey, can I be on your shooting spree?
I think
like only if you let me on your shooting spree. Okay.
That's an interesting theory, but I think it'd be very hard to do. But yeah.
Well, it seems more reasonable than them just not waking up. Unless they were drugged. The most believable thing to me is that they were drugged and they just weren't able to detect it in any type of toxicology report.
So hear me out here. What if they weren't drugged in a matter of, you know, real, like, what if they weren't drugged in the matter of, like, someone put a drug in their drink? But what if they were almost supernaturally drugged? What if there was a presence in this house that had been driving the anger of the family to ramp up ever since DeFeo was a kid?
They took a hit of that ectoplasm.
Right. Well, what if this presence lived in the basement, the same place where DeFeo lived? But what if he was influenced to do this by his LSD use, his heroin use, and his seeing things coming from the basement? Because we'll see later, other people sense things coming from this basement as well.
Even if that was true, though, how would that change his ability to do that without waking anyone up?
What if he was helped supernaturally to kill his family? What if he was actually helped?
So it didn't actually help him. It just, like, kept them at bay?
Yes. What if it did keep them in a sense of, like, a stupor almost, and they couldn't move? I mean, think about it, sleep paralysis.
Yeah.
What if it's just that on a mass level, and he just got to do what he needed to do?
Is that more believable than him being able to find six people to shoot them?
I don't know if it's more or less. To me, it almost feels like maybe it is because of what happens with the Lutz family and the fact that it happened at the witching hour and the fact that he lived in this negative presence. I don't know.
We're not in spooky territory yet. So
Crossing the toe of it. Crossing the line of there. So the next thing coming up is we're going to talk about the actual haunted house that happened to the Lutzes.
The spooky.
Yes, George and Kathy. But, dude, before we get into that, I just really wish I had some coffee right now.
Listen, this is the perfect time to say that we are... We do have some little bit of magic mind sent our way, and we have not tried it yet.
No, I am a little... It is green.
It is green.
It is, I was expecting brown, like
it's,
coffee.
It's matcha?
Matcha.
Listen, this is what we have to do. Here's the instructions. Shake, breathe, and drink.
Shake extremely well.
Yeah, it's for daily use. So basically what this is, it's going to help us focus. And we're actually going to be doing this in the morning. You're supposed to do this in the morning.
Oh.
But this is our introductory to it. We're going to do this 14-day challenge with Magic Mind. And we're going to keep you all updated on the podcast and social media with how it's affecting us, whether or not, you know, it is better than coffee. We are staying focused. We are feeling better about ourselves.
So for we're me, supposed to shoot it?
In our vein. No.
Okay.
For me, this is a new job, new lifestyle. So let's go, baby.
Okay.
Cheers to the Magic Mind.
I wish I could put like a spot in the back and like do like a real shot.
Oh, a shot of it? Yeah. No, we're just going to. Okay. Should we do like a shot and then tip it upside down?
I
don't know if I can
I
do that.
I figured so.
I don't know if I can do that. Let's just try it.
Mazel.
Definitely, I was like, there's like, I can, with the maca that's in it, I can, there's like a strong, there's like a tea-ish flavor to me. Like, I'm getting a little bit like tea.
I was getting notes of matcha.
I will say, it gets better as you drink it.
It was rough to start.
It was a little rough to start. It's not like, you know, honest assessment, it's not a treat.
No.
Okay, let's say you've never had black coffee before, and you take a sip of black coffee. Everyone loves coffee. Everyone knows the benefits of coffee.
Yeah.
Nobody takes their first sip of black coffee and is like, oh, that's the most delicious thing I've ever tasted.
No.
So am I going to drink this in the morning as like a treat or like a shake or something? No. I consider this a balanced drink to go along with like coffee, where it's meant to do more than just taste good.
Yeah, it's not bad. Let me help you.
Okay, let me be honest. It's not, or let me be clear. It's not bad. It's just not a treat. Like, this is something you're taking to better yourself, to focus, to be able to concentrate. It's basically like, it's a caffeine supplement.
So this is matcha. Are there other flavors?
Honey.
Okay. Well, honey might be okay.
Yep. So the maca gives you energy. The adaptogens help you relax. The nootropics keep you focused. And the honey makes you happy.
Okay.
It's a herbal supplement. It's just like a little shot. It's like two fluid ounces. You take it with your morning caffeine. Like I said, it's not like a...
It's not a fun thing.
You're not like, yay, this is a treat. Like, you know when you... Okay. You get the vitamins that you have to swallow.
Yeah.
That sometimes are a little funky. That do more... And then you have, like, the chewable vitamins that taste good, but they probably aren't as good for you. Mm-hmm. This is more like the one you take because it's actually going
to
work.
I think it's a good thing to do because it's supposed to help you focus throughout the day rather than just the spike of coffee.
All right. And you know what? Let's see if our taste buds adapt because we're committed. So we got 13 more days of this.
Yeah.
And we'll keep you all updated.
So the haunting. This same house was bought by a small family a year later.
Oh, is this Ryan Reynolds?
Yes.
Okay.
George and Kathy Lutz and their three children. They were aware of the events that happened in the house, but Lutz family, they talked about it, and they decided they didn't care. They weren't superstitious because this house was like 4,000 square feet, $80,000.
Oh.
It's a steal.
In the what year?
75.
Okay. Just because it's so big. Gotcha.
Yeah, it's huge. But also a murder. several murders were taking place here.
Give and a take. There's probably many houses people buy all the time that have murders and ghosts and demons and poltergeists.
There's a quote.
Did you ask when you bought your house?
Oh, yeah.
If it was haunted?
Oh, yeah. I asked my realtor. He was like, ha, 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 ha.
And you're like, no, seriously. No.
Yeah. Okay. He's like, well, I think there were a couple of deaths. There were actually two deaths in my house. There's one in the house and one that happened outside the house.
Yeah, I always joked that I was going to ask, but then it was such a crazy market where, like, we found the house, looked at it the same day, made the offer, like, the same day.
I was mid-sign. I was like, yeah, so this is haunted. It's not haunted, right?
He's like, oh, sign there, dot there. Yeah, f***ing is. All right, go here. All right, perfect. Yeah, it's your house. Congratulations. The three of you are going to be so happy here. You're like, wait, what?
The quote from George himself, he said he enjoyed moving in.
Okay, that's his quote.
Like when they were moving into the house, he was like, I enjoyed moving in.
Did he have two men in a truck or was it the process?
I assume they had help moving in as well.
I love move-in day.
I think you mean there wasn't like an ominous presence.
But maybe the ghost will help us move in.
Well, they didn't believe in ghosts.
Float those boxes over there. All right.
Like they didn't believe in anything.
Okay.
So they did have a dog named Harry. And he knew something was wrong because when, like, within the hour of the moving in, Harry, who was chained to a tree, tried to hang himself from the fence.
Holy shit.
In the first hour.
Is there a quote?
That's not a quote. It's just...
No, I'm asking, like, bark, bark, shit's haunted.
Yeah, about it. Yeah.
Wow. No, that's actually really disturbing.
Yeah. Reminds me of The Conjuring, the dog wouldn't come inside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was wondering what it made me think of. I'm glad you said that, because that is true.
So, besides the dog trying to kill himself, within a week, Kathy had already experienced being touched by something no one could explain.
Is that George's wife?
That's the wife, yeah.
Okay.
She'd already experienced, like, some touching.
Was it in the basement, or is it just in the house in general?
Didn't say where. Okay. In the house in general. But Kathy did experience a bit of a maternal presence at first. Hers was not, didn't start off as a scary kind of haunting. It almost started as like a wife and a wife. Like the wife of Ronald was kind of, you know, like a nice haunting.
Just like a presence.
Yeah, like a nice kind of comforting motherly presence. So she felt this like nice presence for like a little while. But one night, like within the first week, she woke up at like 3 a.m. and she looked at herself in the mirror. And what she saw was this old hag with, like, wrinkled hands and, like, a grinning smile looking back at her. On her body.
Oh.
It was her face. It wasn't her face. It was, like, another, like, a old hag, but, like, on her body.
Ugh.
And then she screamed and woke everybody up.
She lived the horror movie jump scare.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, it's really creepy. And that's when things started to, like, amp up for them. So many things happened in the haunting of Amityville. So some of the major things that happened was that a priest was made significantly ill. The daughter talked to a demon.
What?
And...
wait, what?
We'll get there.
Oh, God.
And George was almost possibly possessed by a spirit and perhaps almost driven to kill his whole family.
Which is the movie.
Yeah.
If you've seen any of the movies.
So on December 9th, 1975, a friend of the Lutz family insisted they should have the house blessed after he found out what happened in that home. So both the Lutzes had fallen out of religion by that time. They had moved into the home, but George did know a priest named Father Ray, who agreed to get someone to bless the house. So the Lutzes moved in on December 18th, and on the afternoon of the 18th, Father Mancuso arrived to perform the rite. Now, as soon as he started to flick the holy water into this part of the house, he heard a deep voice say,
"Get out."
Now, he didn't tell the family what he experienced at the time. It just kind of happened, and he was like, well, gotta go.
So he just left?
He left.
He's like, I'm gonna get out then.
Yeah.
Good advice. So was he the only one that heard it at the time?
Yes, he was.
Oh, jeez. And he left.
Yeah.
Wow.
But he did call on Christmas Eve, December 24th, a couple days later.
By the way.
Father Mancuso called the Lutzes and advised them to avoid the second floor.
Of the house, which
had two rooms. One of them was where Kathy had planned to turn this room into a sewing room. It had a big window in it. And this is where there was an overabundance of big black flies. Now, there are flies that are common to this area, but they, no matter how many they killed, what time of day, there are always these giant flies in this room.
Mm.
Could not get rid of them, which is a sign of some kind of something.
Bad juju?
Yeah.
Speaking of, because I just remember this is in New York, I am hoping by the time that this episode drops, the Cleveland Guardians have properly put away the New York Yankees and Aaron Judge.
I hope so, too.
Probably not the case, but if it is, hooray for Cleveland. But anyways, you may continue with your demon sewing room.
So the sewing room is also where Father Mancuso heard the voice say, get out.
Mm.
So this room is properly, speaking of properly, haunted.
Imagine all these sewing needles just flying at him.
That's really scary.
It is, yeah. It's kind of messed up. He just left him hanging.
Oh, absolutely. But while Mancuso was on the phone giving this warning, the phone cut off into static. And after the phone cut off into static, Mancuso came down with a extremely high fever. And do you know what stigmata is?
What?
Stigmata?
No.
That's where it'll happen to in religious folklore a lot, where like statues and people, they will bleed from their hands where Jesus was pinned to the cross.
Oh.
He formed giant blisters in the palms of his hands, almost as like a mocking of stigmata.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like that's documented.
Yeah.
Jeez. How could he text him his Venmo then for his his blessing, his right?
You know, it's funny. George asked how much was it going to be.
Yeah.
And he said, this isn't the kind of thing you charge for.
Yeah. Maybe that's why he didn't feel bad about just leaving.
Maybe.
In the middle of it. No, it was free anyway.
Got to go. So mid-January, the Lutz family had enough and ran from the house. I know we're going to talk about what actually happened in that stretch of time, but that's when they left, was mid-January. And part of the reason the family left was because they said they saw green, black slime oozing from the walls. And the Lutz family refused to discuss the final night in full detail because they said it was too terrifying.
Oh, you know what they saw then.
What's that?
The hash-slinging slasher. The walls will ooze green slime.
I actually think that came from this.
It probably did, actually.
Yeah.
But I think they saw the hash-slinging slasher.
I think.
That's not even the first reference on this podcast to that.
No, it's not. It's a good reference, though.
Yeah, I wonder if it did come from that. That's interesting.
I think it probably did. It makes sense.
Yeah.
So, Marcus Parks from Last Podcast on the Left posits that the last night was about terrible abuse coming from George, like almost like a buildup, right?
Hmm.
Because there is evidence that this has been happening the whole time, but it was too terrifying because they didn't want like George to get like arrested because of how bad it had gotten. And I tend to agree with this because, like I said, George was slowly becoming possessed the entire time the Lutz family lived in this house. He would wake up every night at 3:15. Sounds familiar, right? Same time the DeFeo's murder happened. And while living at this house, he would increasingly be filled with this rage, and he was known to lash out. Lutz himself, George, was quoted as saying there were odors in the house that came and went. He also said there were sounds. The front door would slam shut in the middle of the night. I couldn't get warm in my house for many days, end quote. And that's another thing that would happen. He would always be cold. He would be awake at all hours, cutting wood for the fire, and then sit in front of it and just let it burn. He was always cold. So the Lutz's youngest, Missy, she was 5 years old, and this is the creepiest thing. She would talk about talking to an angel that lived in her closet named Jody. To Missy, Jody looked like a giant pig, but to George and Kathy, they claimed to see red eyes glowing from that window often. Yeah. They never saw it inside the house, but always went from outside the house.
Little piggy with red eyes.
Yeah.
Oink, oink.
The whole family would experience cold spots and an eerie atmosphere at this time, something like oppression. There was also an upswing in violent attitudes in the house. Like I said, George was violent, would lash out. George and Kathy would fight all the time. The kids would fight, and George may have even hit the kids.
Yeah.
And the next part is suspicious because it involves the Warrens. Now, you and I, we both like the Warrens.
We got some to people, meet Lorraine, yeah.
But some people are suspect of the Warrens.
A little sus.
Yeah. However, in this case, some people have come forward and said that their involvement in this case is less than genuine. I think we should talk about that at the end.
Trying to get that paper?
The Lutz family ran out of the house 28 days later, leaving all their furniture. Jay Anson wrote the book shortly after. Now, the Warrens started their investigation.
So wait, when you said someone talked to a demon, was that the pig?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I didn't...
Absolutely.
Make that connection.
If you look up Jody DeFeo on Google, it's a creepy fucking picture from the movie. I'm not saying do it right now, but you should. So the Warrens started their investigation on February of 76, after the Lutzes left. Lorraine said the house had an, quote, overwhelming sense of sadness and depression. In the basement where DeFeo slept, Ed Warren said he felt, quote, a powerful spirit that drove him down. And that's when he realized this was no ordinary ghost. They had a seance in the house that night, and some reporters talked about how they were scratched and they sensed sadness and they were really scared. One experience Lorraine had in the house, it was a quote. Lorraine said, quote, as I was going up the stairs, I reached a point where I felt a force of water was coming against my chest, almost like a waterfall. She said, her initial feelings inside the haunted house, it was the worst feeling. I stopped on the landing and held tight to the relic that was in my hand and asked for strength and direction in going forward. It felt ominous to me, end quote.
Have they made a movie about the Warrens with this house?
No.
Seems like a missed opportunity.
Yeah, they have not added this to the Conjuringverse.
Even if it was like a movie entirely after the Amityville Horror.
Yeah.
Like maybe bring back Ryan Reynolds for like a cameo and then...
Be a good cameo.
Yeah.
So... After the investigation, the Warrens were severely scared of this home. This is one of the ones they didn't even like to talk about.
They said hashtag believable.
Yeah. And they said the family should not move back into here. And then they returned the house back to the bank on August 30th, 1976.
The Warrens are like, listen, you better not move back here, but we'll take it off your hands for really cheap. Don't ask too many questions.
Years later, Lorraine said, quote, Amityville was horrible, honey. It was absolutely horrible. It followed us right straight across the country. I didn't even like to talk about it. I will never go in the Amityville house ever again. You don't know how long my career is. That's the only one. End quote. So, one more thing is I have the famous picture from the Amityville house, which I showed to you before. I don't know if you remember it.
I don't know. Oh, yeah. Is that Jody?
No.
Is that the piggy?
There is speculation that it is John DeFeo.
Oh, ooh.
Yeah. It's a little boy. And you can see his eyes glowing in the corner there.
Yeah.
In the room where I think he was probably shot.
That's creepy.
Yeah. There is another photo where it's like side by side of like his picture and this ghost. It's really creepy.
Eerily similar.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's spooky.
Now there is a theory that it is a son of one of the reporters there that night, reporters or helping investigator.
Yeah, just bring your kid to reporter day.
That's the thing. I think people would say that they brought a kid on this investigation. And why would you bring a kid on an overnight investigation? So I don't know if there's merit to that or not.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, hey, I'm going to do this investigation. Is it cool if my kid comes?
I got custody tonight. I got the weekends.
Which room had, like, the least bloody murder?
I wouldn't bring a child.
No.
But the fact that there is a child in that photo is
it's creepy. It's creepy. Yeah.
So that is the two cases of the Amityville Horror House, the haunting of the Amityville House. It's a lot. But let's talk about it in the discussion. So this is where we like to stop the episode. And we like to thank our, as of this recording, new patrons. Because we just appreciate you so much. And their names are Brett, Josie, Jake, Kylie, Gemma, Brendan, Angel, Devin, Bear, Nathan, and Amelia. The last four came in like all today, really hot, out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere. No, it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. We appreciate all the support. We get very excited. I just want to say, normally sometimes they have funky names and then you know, I get their shipping address because we do send shirts out to our dedicated tier. Exclusive shirts you can't buy. You only get by being a patron. And normally I'll see the real name on their address. All I got is Bear. All I got is Bear. So, you know, it's going to Bear. I like it.
It's a good name. Strong name.
I like it, yeah.
I got a bear tattoo. Maybe it's a bear.
Yeah, maybe it's you.
Yep, maybe it's something. But anyway, Tyler, why don't you tell Bear what they can expect from the Patreon?
Alright, Big Bear, Little Bear.
Papa Bear, Mother Bear.
Bear in the Big Blue House. I'm going to tell you what you can expect now that you are a patron of Believe in the Bizarre. You're going to get quizzes. You're going to get director's cuts. You're going to get Netflix party watches where we all hang out and chat in a little messenger thing and we watch horror movies together at the same time. You're going to get bonus segments and games like Do You Believe the Bizarre? And get ringtones. We have phone wallpapers. We also do interviews with people that have submitted their listener submissions to us where we kind of go in a deeper dive. It's a lot of content. It's a lot of extra stuff. If you're just joining now, all of our backlog from like the last year and a half is now open to you.
Yeah.
So literally, you can listen to mine and Charlie's voices until you die, which I wouldn't recommend. But when you're, you know, you're walking your dog or you're driving to work or you're doing dishes, it's nice to throw on a little bizarre segment.
There's a lot of games that you can catch up on. And also you can see how the patrons evolved.
Yeah.
Through that time as well.
It's a lot of fun. We did just bring back theatrical readings, which are highly, highly edited sound effects, music, fictional stories, kind of like No Sleep Podcast, if you're familiar. So there's a lot of fun stuff here. We appreciate everybody supporting us. It goes a long way. It means a lot to us.
Yeah.
And so, we're excited to do it.
Absolutely. We appreciate it. But Tyler, let's get back to the episode. So Tyler, this Amityville Horror House, I still have trouble saying the name. Horror House, not Horror House, not Horror House. Nothing wrong with the I'll stop there. I'll move on. So what do you think of it? What was the biggest thing that stuck out to you? From the murders to the haunting, what was the biggest thing?
I think the evolution of like the signs of possession over time stands out. Visually, what stood out to me the most was definitely Mrs. Lutz, her seeing her reflection be like deformed.
It's
like
an literally a jump scare, right?
Yeah, it is. She lived a jump scare. That really sticks out to me visually. It's kind of like like we joked earlier, how it's like the perfect blend of true crime and horror.
Yeah.
And it really feels like the first part is true crime and the second part is horror.
It is.
And it's just a matter of like, did the first section lead to, like in terms of poltergeist and how we talk about negative energy, was there already paranormal forces there when the DeFeos were there, or did they create it? Did they create that negative energy with what DeFeo Jr. did?
I think what happened in my, I don't know if you're looking for an answer, but I think what happened was there was something there, something maybe demonic, and then it escalated with that negative energy. Because, like I said, I'm a big advocate of maybe there was a demon that helped him do this crime, because I think he did it by himself, but I don't think he could have done it by himself physically.
I can't remember. I feel like it's been 50 minutes ago. Did anybody in the DeFeo family report feeling anything?
No, but there was anger and aggression. There was a lot of aggression in the house.
So it could have been unnoticed symptoms.
Yes, I think so. It could have been that anger seeping up from the basement.
I don't know. I'm not quite on the he got help from something demonic train.
It's just the biggest question is like, what? How could he have done it then? And I know you think maybe drugs, which is fair. It was the 70s. They might have been using something they didn't think to test for.
Yeah, like what they didn't tell you is that was the first time in 23 years he's like, I'll make dinner tonight.
Yeah.
Let's have a pajama dinner party. Or he didn't do it.
I don't think that's it.
I don't know enough. You presented it as he did it, so maybe that is fact.
I feel maybe biased toward it because I think he did do it.
Okay. I don't know enough
about
it. I'll
be straight up. I think that's what happened.
I'm not trying to be contrarian just for the sake of it. I don't know whether or not, based on what I heard today, it seems like he wasn't a great guy and there's a good chance he did it. But I don't know enough about that, you know, to strike my own opinion. I don't know. Maybe, and I guess him hiring 6 people to do it exactly at 3:15, you know.
See it happening, but it'd be hard.
It's, you know, is that easier to believe or a demon helping him? Like, I feel like that's, like, either way, you have to kind of suspend your disbelief a little. Like, there's no easy way to, like, it's not like we're trying to take a simple solution away and make it more complicated just for entertainment value. Like, there's no simple solution.
I feel like I almost am, like, working with algebra. Like, you see the DeFeo murder, it almost seems impossible. You see the Lutz family, what they experienced, and then you kind of work backwards and think maybe that thing helped DeFeo do the impossible thing.
See, I'm actually thinking that they created it.
Oh, DeFeo created this terrible haunting.
Yeah.
Because of what he did.
Yeah. Like, it could have, the negativity could have attracted something, but also they could still be there. Like the picture you showed me.
Oh, I think they are still there. I think the Lutz family, I think the DeFeo family is still there. Like,
that's tragic in itself.
That is such a scary picture. The eyes.
Yeah. So that's kind of my instinct. I feel like something terrible happened, created the negative energy, maybe drew in something, I don't know if I want to say demonic, something bad, and they as spirits are also there.
So a big question about this whole thing is if the Lutz family made it up. What do you think about that? Do you think that they did?
What would be the benefit of making it up?
They wrote a lot of books. They did make some money off of this. They also did lose out on that house.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't really consider that throughout the... It didn't strike me as something that they would have done.
It doesn't strike me because they lose so much in the scenario, it almost doesn't make sense.
Yeah, also it's not like just because they were murdered there doesn't mean that they should be thinking this type of way.
Mm-hmm.
Like these type of entities. Also be like, I feel like if they were going to fake it, they would have been like, we are being haunted by the ghost of so-and-so DeFeo.
Absolutely.
Not like, they're not really claiming it to be that family.
It's pretty vague about the haunting.
Yeah, so I feel like if they were trying to make that narrative, they would have leaned into it being that family or someone from, or the person that did it.
Yeah.
But I guess he's still alive, right?
He is dead now, but he was alive at the time.
So I guess they couldn't say it was him.
But absolutely could be the father.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it doesn't feel like a setup, but then again, maybe they just, you know, they all came together and they're like, all right, listen, I'm gonna have to smack you around a little bit, but we're gonna get books out of this. And books are worth so much money, we're gonna be well off for the rest of our life. There's no way anything like Kindle or Amazon's gonna come around and ruin it for us.
I don't necessarily buy it either.
TV shows. Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's worth being discussed as a theory. I think pretty much everything we type on this podcast could be broken down into that theory.
Mm-hmm.
Like, did they do it for entertainment? Did they do it for the clout? Did they do it for the money? I don't know.
So I guess ultimately, do you think this famous story is real?
So what aspect in my rating? Because there's two aspects of it. Like, am I rating whether or not the Lutz family was haunted? Like, how am I breaking this down?
We're really focusing on the haunting here. Because that was just setting it up. Because the family was murdered. I just want to make sure you knew the family was murdered. Do you think the Lutzes had this haunting happen?
I'll give it a viable, because it feels like until you mention it, I didn't consider that they were faking it. The Warrens kind of go a little over the top, but then again, that also, it like, it's not fair, but it adds the credibility just as much as it makes you wonder whether or not it's real.
It does.
I definitely lean more believable than not. Like I said, it's viable. On our scale, where we go from believable to viable to skeptical to unbelievable, I feel pretty comfortable going viable.
I also go viable with this as well.
What holds you back from going believable?
Going full believable, it's the fact that the Warrens are involved. The fact that a lot of people were skeptical at first about this story as well, because there's a lot to lose.
Yeah.
And so I it was ramping up, but maybe that wasn't because of something evil. It was just because of who he was.
How did them leaving, though, make George better, though?
I don't know.
You know what I mean? Like, what is the weight behind that theory?
I mean, there's also the theory that he was making more money based off the sales of the books and stuff, and he didn't have to worry as much. I don't know exactly.
But you know what I mean? Like, if it's fake and they were doing it to get George to stop being abusive, I don't know how that makes sense.
It doesn't seem to help, really.
It actually makes it seem like they believe it's haunted, if that's the case. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I go viable. I think there's definitely something there. It's one of the more popular cases of hauntings in the United States. Multiple movies. Shout out Ryan Reynolds.
Another thing that makes me go not quite believable is that everyone who's lived there after has said there's nothing wrong with this house.
Although, the Warrens did bless it. Or they did a seance.
They did do a seance.
They sucked it out. Get out of here, piggy.
Or maybe...
Jody the piggy.
Got everything it needed from the Lutzes.
Maybe.
And left.
Yeah. I don't know. Is there any story about whether the family's okay after? Like, did George, like, chill out?
Yeah. If they're okay after.
So he stopped being as aggressive.
Yes, he did.
Yeah. That gets me a viable.
Okay. So that was the episode on the Amityville Horror. Wow. Just it's such a big story.
It's popular. I'm sure maybe y'all didn't know every detail about this, but I guarantee most of you either saw one of the movies or you know at least something about it. We did talk about it in the Witching Hour. But it's like it's one of those big ones. It's like it's around Halloween time.
Yeah.
Everybody can kinda you look at your phone, you see the new episodes out, it's Amityville Horror, you're like, oh, we're talking about this, you know.
There's a lot of details in this story too. A lot. So I'm not saying I hit all of them, just making sure you know there's a lot.
Yep. And if you're enjoying this and you want to celebrate this spooky season with us, just a reminder, we are doing our live Halloween special episode on October 28th. It's a Friday. We're going to be doing it on Twitch, so you can either join then or if you want to prepare, make sure you go to Twitch, create an account if you don't already have one. Follow us at Believing the Bizarre. It is going to be live Friday, October 28th at 9 p.m. Eastern time. So you on the West Coast, it might be a little bit early. That's 6 p.m., but we're trying to make it work for you because on our end, it's late.
Yeah. And speaking of Twitch, if you want to talk about this episode, join us on Tuesday, the day this comes out, to talk about the Amityville Horror and your theories, what you thought about it, how you felt about it. You think, you know, George was really cool.
Which version of the movie is your favorite? What do you think? What's your favorite Ryan Reynolds character? Listen, and this is also on the tech side. This is my advice. You don't want it to be 8:55 on October 28th and you forgot your Twitch password or you're creating your account and you have to do the two-factor authentication and you're like, what's my phone number again? What's my recovery email? Just get it out of the way. Get it done this Tuesday, today. Come do this Twitch with us on Tuesday, talk about the Amityville Horror, and you will be golden by October 28th for the live episode on a topic that we can't say yet. It's a surprise, but we will be recording it on site.
That's just
as on site as we can get.
That's just sound advice. That's just good fatherly advice.
Yeah. Like, it's something I would do. Like, I'd be nervous that it wouldn't work day of or like minutes of, and I would make sure it functions. Maybe it's just, not anxiety.
Overpreparedness.
Yeah. Stressed out. Stress. Something overthinker. Like overthinking. Yeah. That's the type of overthinking I do. And if there's anyone out there like me, that's the kind of stuff I'm like, oh no, what if like I forget my password and then I can't, you know?
Yeah.
So that's, yes, it's to get you in Twitch, but also it's to make sure that if you do actually want to come hang out with us live on October 28th, you're prepared. Also, you know, we haven't said this in a long time. We do have a bunch of merch. We got shirts. We got posters now. We got, I was going to say hats. That's not true. We got stickers. We have a whole bunch of hoodies, things like that. BelievingTheBizarre.com. Shop our merch. Check it out.
And if you like this episode, please feel free to go on Apple and leave us a review and 5 stars. That would be great for us. Thank you so much.
Or if you're on Spotify, just hit that 5-star and keep on moving along. But seriously, everybody, thank you so much for hanging out with us. Thanks for listening to this episode. As always, I'm Tyler.
And I'm Charlie.
And catch us next week on Believing the Bizarre.
Podcast as bizarre as you are.